Recovery Radio, KMP3, 1000 Oaks.
Yes. Listening to the Recovery Radio podcast on KMP3. I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will be your host. You can email me at sarcasticbigbook@gmail. You can follow me on Instagram. sarcastic.aa.book. And as always, so glad you're here with me. I don't know if your day is just getting started or it's just winding down or it's somewhere in the middle, but here we are, and I'm glad. You and me. Right now, here together, I have my piping hot cup of French roast coffee with me. I get it so it's piping hot right before I'm set to record, so I can really enjoy the steam swirling into the air as I talk to you. Grateful I have no desire to drink today. Woke up with no desire to drink today. Pretty amazing. Do you have coffee? Well, why not? Or good for you. So much that I always want to talk about. So grateful. I was talking to somebody the other day and they were like, they couldn't fathom me not being like this. They couldn't fathom me struggling, being miserable, angry, scared to death. They couldn't fathom it. Sure you hear the wind chimes today. They're really going to be blowing. It's really windy here today. But they couldn't imagine it. And they said, do you have any pictures or anything like that? You know, I have some pictures. I have some pictures, but they don't do the period justice. I have pictures of me during better times back then, actually, and I still look miserable, and like I've shared, I was a beautiful woman with long, flowing, fair faucet hair, but there really aren't pictures that really do that justice, because I was explained to him that nobody was taking my picture for years. Nobody was like, smile. I wasn't. That part of my life was gone. I was alone. I do remember making a video at some point, VHS video, at some point, of just, you know, God knows what I was talking about. I remember I watched it one time around then. It's very hazy. And it was so disturbing to see myself that I think I smashed it or something. Very vague. Last couple of years of my drinking were very vague. But I was telling this person that when I first got sober, I was said, who did you have? Who did you lean on? Who'd you talk to? When I first got sober, the answer is no one. Nobody. I was afraid of people. I was afraid to talk to people. I was afraid to ask for help. I was afraid to interact. I didn't know how to interact with people. And I would go to meetings and sit in my car and watch the meeting begin and leave frequently. Because I just couldn't walk through that fear. I just couldn't do it. It was too much fear. And then sometimes I would just dig deep and get out of my car and walk in. Scared to death. And then somebody would say hi and, you know, have a flood of judgment come over me. I know I didn't want to be here. You suck. I hate this person. You're annoying. You're gross. Whatever. An awful way to live. And you don't like me, and I don't belong here. I'm not worthy. That was the theme that I had. I'm not worthy. I'm not worth anything. The conversation I had with myself most frequently, close to constantly, when I first got sober and for a while, was, you suck, you're a loser, you can't, you'll never be able to, you're not good enough, you suck. I mean, I wasn't like hearing voices that were like, you're not valuable enough, you know. It was just, you suck, you know, I suck. I suck, I'm such a loser. Those were the two. I suck, I'm such a loser. And that used to be the conversation I had with myself all the time. It was the only conversation I had with myself for a long time. So it was hard to sit in my car and hear that, and then all of my blaming and indignation, and still walk through all that, go into a meeting and start putting my hand out, piece by piece, start changing little things, piece by piece, these little simple things. It had to be little simple things. And that's what's shaped my whole life, my whole sobriety. Just the consistent, changing little simple things. And that has brought me to a place that is the very opposite of what I just described. As I sit here today, such a different place today, such a different place. My inner dialogue is peaceful. I mean, my inner dialogue is peaceful when I'm talking to you, when I'm looking at you, when I'm thinking about you, when I wake up, when I go to bed, it's peaceful. Almost all the time. But it started with these little, simple things. Okay, you know, like month one was work on showing up. My sponsor used to talk about the 30-day wonder. You don't want to be a 30-day wonder. Somebody who understands everything and gets everything and is done and just you know, he said it's like, I've shared about this, it's like a steak dinner. You take off a, you know, you cut off a little piece and you chew it. So, when I was 30 days sober, I was still working on saying hello. I wasn't. I did get into the steps, and once I got into the steps, I did them very quickly. And had some big changes happen in that were really significant. And even with those big changes, I still didn't understand that. I didn't understand anything. A lot of it was intellectual still. You just hadn't had enough experience. People will bash the concept of having time like it's nothing sometimes, but it's not nothing. When you endure things sober, and not only endure, but thrive through trials, it changes you. When you go through dark, confusing events, frightening events, when you move through those with some peace and serenity, and you're able to capitalize them as opportunities to demonstrate God, and you come out the other side better, it changes you. It makes you less afraid of anything when you are able to navigate anything. You navigate something that seems impossible, then less things seem impossible. And then that happens repeatedly, and that's one of the things that being sober consistently has done for me. It's changed me. In and of itself, the time means nothing. In and of itself. Meaning, somebody could be sober for 90 days but not doing anything and not planning on doing anything and still manipulating and still lying and still, then it's 90 days on the wrong road, and it's 90 days that doesn't really mean anything. But if you're on the right road for one day, that's very valuable. But it took me a long time to learn that really small, simple things make the difference. It's not complicated. But we make it complicated. It's not. I made it very complicated. But I had to just keep cutting that steak, taking little bites. Okay, I'll try praying. I don't know what I'm doing. I'll close my eyes and wing it. I don't know. Are you there? That was my first prayer. Anybody there? Walking around with a flashlight, you know, in the dark. Hello? Anybody here? Anybody? And then eventually it was like, okay, I'll think about getting a sponsor. I'll just think about it. I'll just be open-minded to the idea. Simple little things. Okay. That's solved. I'm open-minded to it. Okay, now I'll select somebody. Okay, now I'll... I was going to say take this simple step of asking somebody to be your sponsor, but that was really hard for me. But I did it. And then it was pick up the phone. Simple little things. Okay, now actually do what you say you're going to do. You agreed to meet him at Astro's Diner. Now, the next step is show up. He asks you to read something. Are you serious or not? If you're serious, you'll read it right now. He asked you to read it. What else do you have going on that's more important? Nothing. All right. Simple little things. All right, I'll read it. Simple. All right, he asked me to write an inventory. He asked me to do exactly what it suggests on this page. Nothing more, nothing less. Okay. I want to complicate it, but I'm not going to. Just do this. When? Now. Why? What else is more important? Just do it. So I did it. On and on and on. And all throughout that, I was still on an emotional roller coaster. I was still afraid. I still didn't trust God, really. I still had a really hard time listening, paying attention. I did not want to relinquish control over my relationships with women. I was going to give everything else to God, but not that. I still wanted to do what I wanted there. It was one simple thing at a time. But it was, a lot went into it. A lot has gone into my experience today. It just happened. I launched on a course of vigorous action, and I've done my best to stay on that course of vigorous action every day. And the reason I'm saying all this is, like I said, I talked to somebody who really can't imagine anything other than the me they know today. And I was trying to explain it, as I'm trying to explain it now. I haven't changed a little bit. I have been transformed by this practicing of spiritual principles at the best of my ability. Today, I've changed so dramatically. I keep things super simple. When I get a negative thought, I don't feed it. I remind myself, I can't believe in God in this moment and have this thought at the same time. and I turn my attention to something else. A loving thought and a loving action. That changes me. That continues to change me. It's changed me so much. But it's simple. It's not complex. When I read something that speaks to what I'm saying, I want to read it because it makes sense to me today, but it wouldn't have made sense to me when my head was so busy I couldn't really listen. But I'll share this with you. It's from this character called Emmett Fox. It's from around the year. Okay, I'm going to read some of this. It's from February 23rd. There's an anecdote of the Far West that carries a wonderful lesson. It appears that a party of hunters, being called away from their camp, left a campfire unattended, with a kettle of water boiling on it. Presently, an old bear crept out of the woods, and seeing the kettle, with its lid dancing about on top, promptly seized it. The boiling water scalded him badly, but instead of dropping the kettle instantly, he proceeded to hug it tightly, this being a bear's idea of defense. Of course, the tighter he hugged it, the more it burned him, and the more it burned him, the tighter he hugged it, and so on in a vicious cycle, to the undoing of the bear. This illustrates perfectly the way in which many people hug their difficulties to their bosoms by constantly rehearsing them to themselves and others. Whenever you catch yourself thinking about your grievances, say to yourself sternly, "Bear hugs kettle," and think about God instead. You will be surprised at how quickly some long-standing wounds will heal. I think that's pretty amazing. No? So the bear's idea of defense is to hug something. Oh, he hugs it. He should just drop it. And this is what we do with our problems. We hug them by rehearsing them. I love that. Rehearsing them to ourselves and to others. Tell everybody about our problems. That's like the bear hugging the kettle. That's something as a result of all of the work that I've put in thus far, I've been able to do very, very simply and regularly now, is not hug the kettle. This illustrates perfectly the way in which many people hug their difficulties to their bosoms by constantly rehearsing them to themselves and others. It just makes them worse. So, by doing these little simple things repeatedly, one simple thing at a time, and in consistently doing these little simple things, I eventually arrived at a place where what I just read is my experience, and it's an amazing experience. So try not to hug your problems and rehearse your problems. easy to say, but taking me work to get to this place where I could conceive of that. Because my problems were, my instant reaction to that would have been, but, ... In other words, my reaction would have been to hug them tighter. And I did. Painful. They don't go away that way. There are many people whose problems will never go away. And I have come to see it as because of what I just read. And nothing else. But that's me. I don't know. I'm just one ding-ding. Ringing his bell. I want to congratulate my friend who was a guest recently, John Barleycorn, for his healthy baby boy. I want to say hello to Chelsea. I want to say hello to Stephanie as well. I want to say hello to Laura as well. Recently got to be on Laura's podcast. That's not in the book. So cool. I'm going to have a guest on Tuesday. And then we're going to get into the big book steps, my understanding of the big book in order. It'll take a while. We're going to start that process after I have a guest. And give a shout out to Happy, Joyous, and Three, to Sober Gratitude's podcast, Podcast Greater Than Yourself, the Black Rhinos, and yeah, if anybody needs to hear it, everything's okay. Everything is okay. Yeah. I have a modeling thing coming up that I gotta do. You know what? I forget what I was supposed to talk about. I was joking around with somebody. I don't remember what it is now. There was something I was gonna joke about at the end of the show, but I forgot what it was. So, yeah. I need more coffee. I need to guzzle some coffee, man. I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic, bro. Where are you at with the term loady? When I was in high school, if you were a stoner, you were a loady. I was a loady. Remember the first time I heard that word? It was my high as a kite sister talking about somebody else named Vinny. Her eyes were glazed like donuts, and she was like, he's a loady, man. And I was like, dude, game recognized game. All right, I'm going to get out of here. I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. And, yeah, make it that. And I am going to go try to live a life that's worth saving. And I hope you'll do the same. Good night.